My name's Chris, I'm an addict.
I'm Chris.
Good to be at Maine, good to be at this Maine. The guy who asked me to be here, he ain't here, so I'm not going to thank him. Yeah, it's good to be at a meeting. Really nice to hear you share as well. And, you started off by talking about being nervous, and I was all right up until about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and all of a sudden I started yawning. And I know when I start getting nervous, that's what I do. My body sort of shuts down, and I start yawning. I wouldn't have noticed that when I was using, to be honest with you. You know, the only time I noticed that I was yawning when I was using was when I was starting to cluck. And it come on me, and then my eyes would start watering. And, yeah, I remember. You know, and yeah, it's really good to be here. You know, I've been thinking about, you know, what do I say? What do I, you know? And it's a miracle. It's a real miracle for me and my family and the people that I love that I'm in recovery. And that's what I've really got to say, you know. I never believed that I could get clean. I remember getting nicked, and I remember going to detox, and I remember getting nicked and being so, you know, I just knew that I was fucked. And it weren't like I was fighting for my life to get away or anything. It was just like I instantly surrendered. And I knew it was the safest place for me to be. Because I was just killing myself out there. It was just full on. And, you know, I couldn't think of anywhere worse to be than in jail. You know. And it wouldn't last long, don't get me wrong. So I'd get nicked and I'd think, and I'd be in the cell and the first thing I'd do, I'd ask for a doctor, I'd try and get some meds, da-da-da-da-da. And then I'd get to the nick, usually ones of, and, about 2 days into it, you know, my heart would be falling out, and you know, whether I had a script or not would mean whether I'd be getting something in there, and I'd be trying to plan and trying to think, and me head be going, and because I had this story that I'd tell myself, and I'd tell anybody else as well, that if I didn't get a bit of gear, I'd die. You know, that was the story that I'd tell myself. I thought I was going to die. I just thought that was it. You know, and it was a lie. You know, it was something that I truly believed, and it was a lie. You know, the thing that I thought that I needed was just killing me. You know, and, yeah, it's amazing, really, that people sort of get clean, stay clean. And my experience of coming into NA was for a prison sentence, well, bit remand, a DRR, going to the detox, a crisis unit. When I was in crisis, I was absolutely fucked. And going to a rehab. And I remember going to this, I remember doing the detox. It was really, really difficult. Detoxing is difficult, full stop. It's just horrible. And doing this detox and then coming out and going to this rehab. And I remember, as soon as I got there, this guy, and he said, "Where are you from?" I said, "I'm from Fulham." We started talking. And he said, "I'm going to get a bit of gear." And next thing I know, my head's off. I've gone in with intentions not to use, and my head started running. All of a sudden, we're on the phone. Next morning, it's a big house down in Forest Hill. And the next morning, they had this group, and it's this big circle of people, you know, my peers sitting in this group, a couple of counsellors. And I'm sitting there, this other guy sitting over there, and he cut for it. He said, "You know, I've got something I want to cut for." He said, "Me and Chris were trying to score yesterday. I just wanted to die." I couldn't believe it. I was mortified. He said, "Me and Chris," he pointed at me. I looked around like that. I was thinking, who's he talking about? I couldn't believe it, because he knew some of my mates, I knew some of his mates, and we started talking. He said, "Yeah, get some gear dropped off." This geezer was a loser. He couldn't get no gear. He couldn't score in a chemist. You know what? But I bought it, because I can't help myself. You know, I know that I'm in trouble. I'm on a DRI. The guy put me back in jail. It ain't working out for me in jail. I'm fucked. You know, and it was amazing, because the whole group spun on him. It done. And I just sat there. I remember this counsellor going to me, "Are you okay?" And I sort of went, "Not really." It was just like, you know, this that's the story of my life, really. Oh, getting into stuff that I just, you know, people say to me, "Why'd you do that?" And the honest answer is, I don't know. What, you know, you've used again. Of course. Because I don't know what, I don't know any other way of surviving or living without using. And you know, you're talking, you know, at a very young age, you know, I was to go visit my neighbours when they weren't there, and all of a sudden the social workers and the probation officers would be turned, you know, people would be turning up my house. I remember these two social workers coming around my house. That in this, the, it was like they were stuck in the 70s, flares, Jesus creepers, big collars. You know, I was about 12 years old, and my old man was a big lump. And he said to me, "You ever bring these cunts round my house again?" He said, "I'll kill you." The next day I go out, I'm with my two pals, they're both in recovery. And you know, James and Paul, the twins from Mitcham, and we're throwing stones. We've done this window. It's an old house. It's no one lives there, I'm sure. But we're having a stone fight. All of a sudden, we attack the house. The window goes through. The old bill come past. They just see us. They take me back home. So it ain't the social workers now. It's the police. And I'm just thinking, oh, my God. You know, why'd you do it? I don't know. I just do stuff. I can't not do stuff. I'll do it now. It's not something that I've learnt to break in recovery. I still do stuff now and I think, why the fuck did you do that? Why did you say that? And I get full of fear. I just get lit up. It like, you know, I weigh myself in. You know, and you know, recovery's been, I've been really blessed in recovery. I really have. You know, my life is so different. My head ain't changed that much, but my life is really, really different. You know, I still have the stuff going on in the head. I still make judgments. I make big mistakes, big ricks. You know, and I try to do something about them as well. You know, I really try. You know, I remember going to a meeting and meeting this guy, and he sort of, and I'd heard him share a couple of times, and you know, I asked this guy for a bit of sponsorship. One of the first things he said to me was that I'd never have to use again, one day at a time, if I worked this program. And I haven't. Wow. And I've been around a little while, and I couldn't believe that. Nobody said that to me. People told me not to use. They tell me to do all kinds of stuff. Treatment centres love telling me to come back. You know. Yeah, it's bizarre. I was fucked. I need somebody to give me some. And he said that my freedom would be found within the 12 steps of recovery. And you know, being a little time round, that I can forget that. And that's my truth. You know, I don't hold on to it and think, I forget. I forget, and what I forget to do a lot is I forget to ask. So I forget to ask for help. So I'm fishing. I'm coming back to it. I'm fishing. I've got two rods. They're both out in the lake. There's me and another guy on the lake. He's about three swims down. All of a sudden, my rod tears off. I hook into this carp, and I'm playing this fish, and the other one tears up as well. And I think, oh, fuck. So I'm trying to get this one in, because in the back of my mind, I think the bigger one's on the other rod. And I'll get it right into the net. I'll get it in the net. I pick the other rod up, it's gone. I've hooked it. I've got one in there. I've got the other one up. This guy's he's sitting there. He's watching me. Anyway, I think I lost the big one. I've got a little one. So I said to him, I don't know why I say these things. I said to him, what'd you do when that happens? He just looked at me, he said, I normally ask for a bit of help. it really, really, you know, I've been around a little while. But the selfishness is still there, it's still there. I'm always looking for the bigger and that's the story, really. You know, this process has healed things in my life that I never thought could be healed. You know, especially with family members and friends and meet, you know, I was at a meeting with a pal of mine down in Clapham, and I'm not liking this meeting, so I get up, I start walking out, I get out of the door, and this girl comes walking up behind me, says, "Chris." So I look around, I'm looking at this woman, I ain't got a clue who she is. And she said, it's Danny. And this took me to a place when we was kids, me and this guy. I remember getting taken to this vocational centre in Oxfordshire. And we was both in the car. I remember us driving the guy mad, who was driving the social worker mad, to let us out go for a piss. And he stopped in his country lane down in Oxford. We both got out of the car and we bolted across this field. And I remember the social worker just looking, and he must have just thought, "What the fuck is going on here?" And we run across this field, just run. He must have got back in his car and had to go back and report that he'd lost us. This guy was, you know. So this woman, she's a woman now, was my best mate when we was kids. And she was in recovery. And the sort, when I'm talking about things that have happened to me in recovery, it's just been amazing. That she'd had a full change. And we met up. I was going from the meeting, but we met up the next day. And it's just so interesting. What I perceive and what I see is not always the truth. It just blew me away. She found a lot of freedom in getting honest. And, you know, you're talking about being honest. And there's some things, you know, I still lie. You know, it can happen. You know, even to little bits like, "How you doing?" I say, "I'm sweet." When really I'm boiling. Me is not sweet. I find it really hard to make relationships and keep relationships and build relationships. But what I do is I keep trying. I keep trying to take my own inventory. I keep trying to work on stuff that I find difficult. You know, and I remember them days down in Oxford, and I thought it was like a sentence, and it weren't. I remember going there, and I had some of the best times of my life at this place. I was there for 18 months, and in the end, you know, I come back to London and picked up drugs, and I couldn't stop. You know, I'm having my first bit of gear. And it was all fun. I felt like I was a bit on the edge and a bit. And it fucking ruined me. It really ironed me out. You know, so when I got in recovery and somebody told me I'd never have to use again, it blew me away. And I started working the 12 steps with this guy. And he showed me a lot of love and a lot of care and he gave me a lot of time. I felt I was really damaged, and I think he knew that as well. And he gave me a lot of time. And the damage really came around me and my dad and our relationship. My old man was an heavy drinker, my old man. You know, and then he passed away at 58, you know, while I was in recovery. And it was funny because I remember getting to the amends process of, you know, the step eight and step nine, getting to the amends process, and my sponsor had always said to me, he said, just make yourself busy around the house, go around there, do the lawn, do the gardening, do the washing up, that sort of stuff, you know, give him time. And I remember coming from his first stage house and going around and doing his lawn, and I used to fucking hate it. And he'd come out and he'd say, "You're doing it all, Chrissy, you're doing it all wrong." And I'd be like, "Oh, for fuck's sake." And I wanted to say to him, "Listen, you fat cunt." You know, and I was really up against it. And, you know, because that's how we speak to each other. That's on a good day. And I remember going up and down, doing this lawnmower, up and down, thinking about my sponsor, thinking about doing the next right thing, up and down. I'm getting all this grass cutting, going all over my jeans. I'm in treatment. You know, when you're going to treatment, you're going with a set of clothes. Now I'm sort of like 7-8 months into treatment. It looks like my bollocks go exploding my jeans. I put on about 3 stones, do you know what I mean? I'm just like that. I'm just all over the gap. I can't believe it. And I'm getting all this grass up my trainers. And he says to me, so it's boiling up, boiling up. 2006, I think. Boiling up. He says to me, Chrissy, he said, I've got a couple of ciders in the fridge. I said, I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, and I'm doing the prayer, I'm doing the prayer, I'm doing the prayer. He says, don't worry, boy, it's only cider. I told him I don't drink, he knows I don't drink. Don't worry, boy, it's only cider. So you got to remember, my old man, he went down a pub one day. He come back with Shetland pony. I swear to God. Someone had chawed it from the city farm. Give it to him down the pub. He's brought it home. And he thought he was getting Shergar, I'm sure. It was so good. This pony stayed in our garden for about 9 months. 9 months, his name was Sugar. That's where he might have got the Shergar stuff mixed up. And it was horrible. I had rotten teeth, a bit like myself. And he used to bite everyone. Yeah. I think he went back to the farms. Don't worry, he went back to the farm. I'm sure he did. Someone took... He went anyway. He did go back to the farm. I think. I hope. I was in a daze. I was fucking on gear. I wasn't going to be responsible for it. And, and I started building this relationship, and that's how I started doing it, because he said to me, don't tell him you're sorry. Don't say you're sorry. Don't say nothing. Just keep going there. Just keep going there. Keep going there. Keep going there. Make yourself useful. And I didn't do it by skipping my step. So, I mean, I had to drag myself around there. And, just real good sponsorship, just real encouraging, just real, because it hurt my step four. It hurt my step five. You know, where I found out the truth about myself, a lot of it anyway. And, so by now I've got to jump up a little bit, so by now I'm working and I'm doing my thing and, I'm not punting off them and all that sort of stuff that I've done for years. And I get this call, I phone my mum, I say, how are you doing? She said, your dad ain't been out of bed for 2 days. I said, what's wrong with him? My old man, he was a diabetic, and she said his toes had gone black. So I'm at work, and I'm fucking mental. I'm thinking, do I stay, do I go, I said, Mum, you need to phone the ambulance, get down to the hospital quick, I was on a Wednesday night, and I'll get down to the hospital, she gets into the hospital, I'll get down to the hospital, and, they're talking about taking his toes off. So on a Wednesday night, they take his toes off. On a Friday night, they take his leg off above the knee. And I ain't gone nowhere. I've spoken to a few people that are here as it goes. And I know what's going to happen. On Monday morning, he passed away. And he knocked the life out of me. But within that, before he went for the first operation, for the first time in my life, I thought, I need to say it. And I said, Dad, I love you. And he just looked at me as if like nothing had ever happened. He said, I love you too, boy. And that was it. And then I supported myself, I supported my mum. And this is what I was told. I was told when I got here that the way I'm going to get support is by trying to help others. And I try to make myself busy around my brothers. I've got a younger brother, 2 younger sisters. And I stayed really strong for them. And then when I come out, I was really supported. I got my help from Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm just so grateful for that. Because I've built this relationship up. And by reading the literature, because when I come in, I had a lot of anger still. Not as much as I did when I was a kid, because by the time I was 37 years old, I knew that I'd fuck my life up myself. I knew that. But through the literature, I understood. about what had happened to this guy, who did go to work and did try his best and did, you know. And where I found forgiveness for him, I found a lot of forgiveness for myself, and I think that's what the process gave me. And it was, you know, it was really sad. And now it feels like quite a long time ago. And, you know, since then, lots and lots of has happened. Things do happen. You know, and I've always been supported here. This is where I've come for my support. You know, and while I was there, I didn't make it all about me. And it was about me, I know that. It was about me, about a boy losing his dad. And that's a big thing, you know, I've got to hold on to that, you know. But I've got all my support from Narcotics Anonymous, the people in Narcotics Anonymous, the people who listen to me on the phone, the people who supported me within that. And I'm really, 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 you know, thankful for that. You know, it's amazing stuff that you just don't know. It's just I heard about 4 months ago that... About 4 months ago, somebody said to me, he said, it's never too late to enjoy your childhood. I'd never heard that before. Nobody had ever told me that before. And I believe that I've been doing that. I really believe that I've been doing that in ways of like hobbies and stuff that I want to do. You know, I talk about football because it was at the top of the league, but behind. So in other sort of stuff. You know, just bought myself a bike. And I think I stopped by. I didn't want to buy a bike because I didn't think I'd be able to do. And once you, it's that thing, isn't it? You get on a bike. They start riding a bike. That's what I put all these barriers up for things that are good for me. Getting a bike, start riding a bike. Once you've learned, you know. And I think it ain't like that anymore. I can really unlearn this stuff very, very quickly. And I see people unlearn this stuff very quickly, and I unlearn this stuff very quickly. And I get stuck. Back in me, back in the terror, back in the anger, back in the fear, back in the problem. And the great thing is, I don't stay there for long. It happens. I don't stay there for long. And it's, you know, I know there's loads of room for growth. And, you know, I sort of kick myself. Sometimes I just kick myself. I just been, could have done this years ago. I went to my first treatment centre when I think I was about 21. I went to a place down in Liverpool. And it was Birkenhead. And I had a taste of being clean. And it was all right. But you know, the power and the draw of the drugs take me back there every time. And what I didn't know then is what I know now. Is that I have an allergy to bush drugs. I crave drugs like I crave when I put one inside me, when I run with that obsession, I take the first drug, it sets off a craving within me that is stronger than my own will. It's stronger than the will of my mum and my family who love me. There's no going back. You know, I haven't relapsed since I've been here, but I've been a serial relapser from. You know, I didn't want to live like that for a long, long time. I really didn't. I didn't want to live like that. I hated myself at the end of my using. And it sort of, you know, I remember, you know, I started off talking about, you know, doing that short sentence. And I remember being in a cell, doubled up, with no meds, just nothing. About two days, and in the end, I thought I've got to ring the bell. And I remember ringing this bell, and this screw come to the thing. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "I'm dying." He said, "Mate, you ring that bell again, I'll break your fingers." And I just know, and I didn't even kick the door or say fuck. I just crawled back to my pit. I just crawled back and laid down. I just wanted to die. You know, I just thought. I just wanted to die, it just hurt me so much. And I've got to understand that I do this stuff to me. This is what I do to myself. This is what I do to myself. And, you know, so that thing about if I don't get a bit of gear, I'm going to die. Now, what the fuck was that about? It was the thing that was killing me. It was killing me in every area of my life. It separated me from the people who love me the most, which are my mum, my dad, my brothers, my sisters. You know. There you go. That. I knew it was going to ring. Good signals. I've come such a long way from where I was. I spent lots of different short spells in prison. I remember being on the yard with a few of my pals and fucking about and then looking at this plane going over and thinking, I'm never going to ever do that. I never got on a plane until I got in recovery. I never went to a football match until I got in recovery. I never done anything nice for myself until I got in recovery. You know, since I've been in recovery, I've spent the last 4 years walking on beaches in India every year. I've been abroad with people from the fellowship. I've done all that stuff that I thought I could never do. You know, I'm in a really solid relationship with somebody that has got enough self-esteem to tell me to shut up and fuck off. You know, she just says, you're full of shit sometimes. She tells me I'm selfish. And I smile. Because I know. And it's just really, my life's really fucking quite ordinary in respects. Even though I come to, I do believe that this is probably the most unnatural setting for somebody to come 3 times a week. You know, it's, you know, sort of got a lot of friends. Well, most of my mates I grew up went to school with, da 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 da, whatever. You know, they've got a couple of friends. They've got a family. They're in a family, and that's about it. You know, going to meetings all over London. Been to meetings in India. Been to meetings in Turkey. I've known people there. So it's quite... it's quite a strange thing for people just to group together like this. Sometimes it don't feel that natural. You know, and that's the truth of it. But it's the only thing that's ever kept me clean. So I've never turned my back on it, hopefully, one day at a time. Yeah, so, you know. I was at a meeting the other night. I was in the crisis unit the other night with my sponsor. And I take the meeting. I get people and I asked him to come. He came about 6 weeks ago, mate. And he took the meeting and I'd done the check. You know, I still get that thing that happens when I'm sitting next to my sponsor sharing. And then he shares afterwards, I think, is he trying to clean up after I've shared? Or is he trying to mop up after me? Have I said something wrong? I've got to remember his notes. He likes talking as well. But you know, when you just... I start looking at him, I'm thinking, you're having a pub? Have I missed anything out? I've done this before. It's like my dad. Done it wrong. You've done it wrong. That's the message. That's the message that I'll keep. You're doing it wrong. Don't do that. Shouldn't have said that. Self-centered. So, you know, just stuck. I'm fishing down in Bushy Park. This kid comes along with his dad. He's like, I've got a beard growing out of his nose. He's got his nostril hairs. I'm like, he's still a ginger-headed kid. There's all these kids, they're throwing food, they're catching fish off the top, they're catching fish, these kids have been sitting, I've seen them the week before, they ain't catching nothing. Oh, fuck it. So I go over and I'll make him up this rig, give him some bait. He sort of looked at me like, his old man saying, "Cheers, mate, cheers, mate." All right, sweet. He casts out, all of a sudden he's gone bang, he's had one. I think, well done. Uses my net, gets it in. 4 or 5 fish later, I'm thinking, cheeky cunt. I'm sitting there on the bank, the most beautiful place you could ever be. There's deers and reindeers about. It's his dad, he's sitting there with his boy. His boy's about 9 years old, ginger hair, like my own kid. All of a sudden, I've made this rig, give him some of my bait. Gets out, he goes, boom. I said, put it there, boom, he has one. Puts it there, boom, he has one. All of a sudden, my swim goes dead. It's gone dead. I ain't had a bleep for about 2 hours. Much of this kid, he's had 5 fish. I want to ask him for the rig back. I want to go over and take the stuff back off him, really. But that's what happens. So this is the illness, isn't it? Because I try to do something good. I feel quite good as I'm walking away from it. As soon as he goes into the second and third fish, I'm thinking, you little fucker. It's amazing, isn't it? Am I on my own? No, I'm not on my own. Too many people laughing. I'm not on my own with that. This is the work, isn't it? So anyway, a week goes by, I go back over there. I notice the kid's reel, he's been bidding on eBay for these reels. He don't get the reels. Got a spare one. Not a spare one, I've got a couple. In fact, I've got too many reels. So I thought, I'll give this kid this reel. So I line it all up, get it all up. I know he's got a beater, he's been there every week. He's always coming over for me bait. He's always after nicking me boilies. And so I give him this reel. He hooks into the fish. His old man says, "Can I borrow it?" And I says, "Sure." He pulls out the fish. I'm looking at the fish. He's gone crack. The net's done. 40 quid. I says to myself, you know what? I'm having a really good day. I'm doing what I want to do. Why can't I mind my own business? That's the noise now. Mind your own business. Don't talk to anyone. His old man says, "Sorry about that." I say, "No, that's sweet, mate. You're all right. That's all right. I've got another one." "I ain't got another one." This is what happens when you stay in the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. Sometimes I think I turn into an idiot, or I might just turn into somebody a bit better than what I was. You know, I don't go to that lake anymore. I felt like I was being stalked. Yeah, you know, I can't tell you how much the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous has done for me, and it's brought to my life. It's just given me. And drugs, all they've done was took away from me. They just edged everything away from me, just chipped away at me so much that I come here. This was the last place I wanted to come. I knew about the rooms, I'd heard about the rooms, I didn't really understand the rooms, but you know, when we're using, somebody says, "You know," I said, "Of course I know." It's the best thing I've ever done. It's got to be, because he's given me everything else. He's given me everything else. And what I've got, I can't buy. So I talk about all the head stuff. All the head stuff. That don't happen 24 hours, 7 days a week. It doesn't. There's a song that I'm really kind of, and I can hear. One of the hardest things I've learned to do in recovery is hear other people. Not have an opinion, just keep your mouth shut. I've got a friend at the moment, I was on the phone to him, he's just told his boss to stick his job up his arse. And I want to say, you know, I want to say, don't be a cunt, you have your skin. Do you know what I mean? Really, really difficult for him. Gotcha. And I found myself saying, "Well, you know, the choice is yours. You either wipe your mouth or you walk away. It's up to you." Don't really have to tell him what he needs to do. He's a fucking grown man. I still care about people, that's what it is. And I think at the end of my using, it wasn't I didn't care. At the end of my using, what happened was you know, we talk about that voice, and then fuck it, you know, fuck this, fuck that, da, 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 da. And what started happening was, I had my sponsor share about this. And what happened was the other voice started becoming more apparent. And it's like, Chris, you don't have to do this to yourself no more. Chris, you're better than this. You're worth more than this, Chris. But it's just that obsession and that physical craving that I suffer with that keeps me going at it. You know, and it's just it's a miracle how people stay clean and get clean when they come from that place. But they've stepped over that line and that adage is already fully kicked in. And you feel that you can't live without it. And what I found in Narcotics Anonymous is it's so much freedom, so much relief. You know, I didn't really have a drug problem. You know, I think drugs were my solution. They fixed me in many ways. They brought a lot to my life when I needed them when I was quite young. They protected me from a lot of stuff that was going on. But then they destroyed me. They took me to the worst place than I'd ever been. It's really good to be here. Thanks for letting me share.